Well, good evening. This day is February 27th, 2024 of the Common Era. The time is 1900 hours Eastern Standard Time. And I'm Ward Green with you again today for our study from the Crucible article. The Crucible of Credible Creed. I had 3 hours sleep last night, and then I went shopping, so please forgive me, my indulging in some xylitol gum. To protect my teeth. I'm about to go to bed after this, I think, and get some more sleep. But after the famine of Abraham's time that we've been talking about, chapter 7, paragraph 6 of the Crucible of Credible Creed by Rolf Ward Green, which is online. We've been talking about Abraham's famine. So after that, about 2131 BCE, which is about the time of Abraham's famine, when he was 75 years old, Abraham's son Isaac experiences a famine in his own times. In both of these reports, the patriarchs feared for their lives because of the beauty of their wives, which we might believe as due to both the ladies' attractiveness and the general lawlessness accompanying the stress of famine. With Abraham dying in 2031 BCE at the age of 175, that was Abraham's age at his death. It accords with the Bible's given sequence of events to count the famine of Isaac's times as near 2030 to 2005 BCE, as Isaac is, as Esau, rather, who's, he's the son of Isaac, he's a twin, a fraternal twin with Jacob. They were both born about 2045 or 2044 BCE in the genealogy, which is our chronology. So they'd be about 40 in the year 2005. And this is because Esau is said to be 40 years old following the account of famine in Isaac's day. And they were both born when Isaac was 60 years old. These numbers are all from the Bible. But the dating, of course, is not from the Bible. That's our chronology. And this was, of course, when Esau was 40 years old, following the famine of Isaac's time. That was 200 years after Abraham's birth, because Abraham was 100 when Isaac was born, and Isaac was 60 at the birth of Esau and Jacob. So when they were 40, it would be a total of 100 plus 60 plus 40 is 200. There's evidence, so that's amazing, because also, we also know that there was said to be a period of 200 years. Which we learned in our previous study. Every 1,500 years, the study of Gerard Bond found there was a famine of duration 200 years. So we've got a famine from 2200 BCE until roughly 2000 BCE. So it fits very, 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 extremely well. There's evidence for turmoil in Egypt at about this time. Continuing the paragraph. Paragraph 6. And specifically in Egypt, some rebellion in the Thinite nome of northern Egypt, some say caused by famine, whilst Pharaoh Mentuhotep II ruled. He achieved a reunification of Egypt roughly by 2033 BCE. Pharaoh Mentuhotep II reigned 51 years, circa 2061 to 2010 BCE. Now, these dates I obtained from some Egyptologist dating online somewhere. I'm not sure if that's from Wikipedia, but let's see. We'll be able to see where it's from here, because Wikipedia, Mentuhotep II, is reference 4 here. And 5. And, reference 6 is from Scribner's Magazine, and reference 7 from Tour Egypt by Jimmy Dunn. Reference 8 is Akkad Ankh Quest by Leah D., 2012, a book. Page 51 of that book. And reference 9 is from Wikipedia, Mentuhotep III. So, Mentuhotep III ruled from 2010 to 1998 BCE. But during the time of Mentuhotep II, 2061 to 2010, severe famine is reported in all the land of Egypt. We read here in paragraph 6 of our article. In the days of his successor, specifically, Mentuhotep III, 2010 to 1998 BCE, and at the time, whenever I say that Wikipedia reports a certain dating, that would be at the time when I wrote the article, that was when Wikipedia reported those dates for those pharaohs. This famine was recorded by an Egyptian named Hekanakht. That's the famine of 2010. Sometime in the period from 2010 to 1998 BCE, it fits perfectly within our time frame of 2005, when Esau became 40. So it's just incredible correspondence. Phenomenal, magnificent correspondence between the Egyptian chronologies. And it tells us which pharaoh was ruling at the time of Isaac and what can we learn about Abraham and his pharaoh? Well, Mentuhotep II was ruling, it says here. So he was the pharaoh of Abraham's time, apparently, and of the famine. He reigned 51 years from 2061 to 2010 BCE. He would be the pharaoh of the days of Abraham. That's remarkable. We didn't even make a big issue of that, but that's a fantastic thing to actually know which pharaoh was ruling in the time of Abraham. Now, little children, Ecclesiastes 3 and 5 is our scripture or proverb for today. It says in verse 1, there's a time for everything, an appointed time. Verse 5, a time to throw stones away, like David throwing the stone at Goliath, but also a time to bring stones together, like David when he's building are talking about building the temple. A time to embrace and a time to keep away from embracing. So, there's a time for everything, including throwing stones away, bringing stones together, and embracing, and keeping away from embracing. In other words, standing a little at a distance from someone, there is a time for that as well. So 1 Chronicles chapter 17. And it came about that as soon as David had begun dwelling in his own house, David proceeded to say to Nathan, the prophet, "Here I am dwelling in a house of cedars, but the Ark of Jehovah, the Ark of the Covenant of Yahweh, or Jehovah, is under tent cloths." Upon that, Nathan said to David, "Everything that is in your heart, do, for the true God is with you." And it came about on that night that the word of God came to Nathan, saying, "Go, and you must say to David, my servant, this is what Yahweh has said. It will not be you that will build me the house in which to dwell, for I have not dwelt in a house from the day that I brought Israel up until this day, but I continued from tent to tent and from one tabernacle to another. During all the time that I walked about in all Israel, did I speak a single word with one of the judges of Israel, whom I commanded to shepherd my people, saying, 'Why have you men not built me a house of cedars?' And now this is what you will say to my servant David. This is what Jehovah of armies has said. I myself took you from the pasture ground, from following the flock, to become a leader over my people Israel. And I shall prove to be with you wherever you do walk, and I shall cut off all your enemies from before you, and I shall certainly make for you a name like the name of the great ones that are upon the earth. And I shall certainly appoint a place for my people Israel and plant them, and they will indeed reside where they are, and no more will they be disturbed. And the sons of unrighteousness will not wear them out again, just as they did at the first, even since the days that I put judges in command over my people Israel. And I shall certainly humble all your enemies," because we have been talking about judges, and we saw how, well, the Philistines and the Ammonites began to molest Israel at the time, the Ammonites on the east of the Jordan and the Philistines on the west, both at the same time, in according to Judges 10 and 7. And that was one of the examples of the sons of unrighteousness wearing out the Israelites. If that's what it's referring to, but here it says, it mentions their enemies, so it's certainly, verse 10 here is talking about their enemies, which include the, and did include the Philistines and Ammonites. And I tell you, quote, "also a house Jehovah will build for you," end quote. So these are the words of the prophet Nathan speaking on behalf of Jehovah, or Yahweh of armies, as he's called. And now verse 11, "And it must occur," Jehovah goes on to say, "that when your days have come to the full for you to go to be with your forefathers, I shall certainly raise up your seed after you that will come to be one of your sons, and I shall indeed firmly establish his kingship. He is the one that will build me a house, and I shall certainly establish his throne firmly to time indefinite." That turned out to be Solomon, David's son. "I myself shall become his father," Jehovah went on, "and he himself will become my son, and by loving kindness I shall not remove from him the way I removed it from the one that happened to be prior to you." That being Saul, King Saul. Jehovah's love was removed from Saul because Saul was unable to please Jehovah in the way he behaved. "And I will cause him to stand in my house," speaking about the son of David, "and in my kingship to time indefinite. And his throne will itself become one lasting to time indefinite." That's the end of verse 14. But time indefinite, we see from that, doesn't mean forever, because the king didn't rule forever, except in the sense that the symbolic throne of Israel was symbolically intended by Jehovah to remain forever. And that's through the Messiah, the Son of God, Jesus Christ, in his resurrected rulership, when he was going to be receiving the kingdom of all of the world and all of the universe, essentially. According to all these words and according to all this vision, verse 15 was the way that Nathan spoke to David. After that, King David came in and sat down before Jehovah and said, "Who am I, O Yahweh God? And what is my house that you have brought me thus far? As though this should be something little in your eyes, O God, yet you speak concerning the house of your servant down to a distant future time. And you have looked on me according to the opportunity of the man in the ascendancy, O Yahweh God. What more could David say to you as to honoring your servant when you yourself know your servant well? O Yahweh, for the sake of your servant and in agreement with your own heart, you have done all these great things by making all the great achievements known. O Yahweh, there is none like you, and there is no God except you in connection with all that we have heard with our ears. And what other nation in the earth is like your people Israel, whom the true God went to redeem to himself as a people, to assign to yourself a name of great achievements and fear-inspiring things by driving out nations from before your people, whom you have redeemed from Egypt? And you proceeded to constitute your people Israel as your people to time indefinite. And you yourself, O Yahweh, became their God. And now, O Yahweh, let the word that you have spoken concerning your servant and concerning his house prove faithful to time indefinite. Let the word that you have spoken concerning your servant and concerning his house prove faithful to time indefinite, and do just as you have spoken. Do just as you have spoken. And let your name prove faithful and become great to time indefinite, saying, Yahweh of armies, the God of Israel, is God to Israel. And let the house of David your servant be one lasting before you. For you yourself, my God, have revealed to your servant the purpose to build him a house. That is why your servant has found occasion to pray before you. And now, O Yahweh, you are the true God, and you promised this goodness concerning your servant. And now you must take it upon yourself and bless the house of your servant, for it to continue to time indefinite before you, for you yourself, O Yahweh, have blessed, and it is blessed to time indefinite. 1 Chronicles 17. Even though Jehovah had already blessed the house, David said, you must take it upon yourself and bless the house of your servant, because you've already blessed it, and it's already blessed to time indefinite. It seems rather odd that David would say you must bless it even though you've already blessed it, because you've already blessed it. That's basically what he said. But that's the way David spoke on that occasion. Hosea chapter 6, come you people, Hosea writes, and do let us return to Jehovah. Now he was of the tribe of Reuben. The tribe of Reuben lived in Gilead on the east side of the Jordan, opposite Jerusalem and also to the south of Jerusalem. For Jehovah, Yahweh himself, has torn in pieces, but he will heal us. He kept striking, but he will bind us up. He will make us alive after 2 days. You notice that after 2 days. Friday evening to Sunday morning is not after 2 days. It's after 1 day and some hours. It's not 2 days plus some hours from Friday afternoon to Sunday morning. So that proves once again that it's 3 days and three nights. Meaning, you know, at least part of the daytime, the 1 day, right? And then two more days, right? But actually 3 more days. because it's after 2 days. It's not after a day and a half here. It's after 2 days and somehow after 2 days. On the third day, he will make us get up. So in our illustration, 3 days and three nights, Friday to Sunday wouldn't be enough. It has to be Thursday. It has to be Thursday to Sunday. So that Thursday and then Friday, Saturday, Sunday, on the third day, he will get up. But it's got to be, according to this, after 2 days. You see? Which it has to accord with the prophecy of Jonah, which was 3 days and three nights. It has to accord with that. And it can't accord with that if it's not Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. 3 days, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So the three nights are Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night. You see? And then Sunday morning, Jesus was resurrected. He was resurrected. You know, he's alive because he was resurrected from the dead. On the third day, he will make us get up, you see? So that's how that's interpreted according to the prophecy of Jonah. And Jesus himself said that it would be the prophecy of Jonah that he would be fulfilling. Doesn't mean less than three, or it doesn't mean less than 2 days, certainly. See, that's what we have to understand. And we will know, and it says, verse 3, we will pursue to know Yahweh. Like dawn, we will pursue to know Yahweh. Now, this is beautiful. Like dawn, his going forth is firmly established. And he will come in like a pouring rain to us, like a spring rain that saturates the earth. Isn't that beautiful? What shall I do to you, O Ephraim? What shall I do to you, O Judah, when the loving kindness of you people is like the morning clouds and like the dew that early goes away? Again, a beautiful illustration, isn't it? That is why I shall have to hew them by the prophets. I shall have to kill them by the sayings of my mouth. He even uses the prophets' words to kill people. And the judgments upon you will be as the light that goes forth, for in loving kindness I have taken delight, and not in sacrifice. Remember, Samuel said to King Saul, it's not in sacrifice, but in obedience, right? Jehovah wanted Saul to be obedient, not to be performing great sacrifices. But here it's, in loving kindness I have taken delight, and not in sacrifice. And in the knowledge of God rather than in whole burnt offerings. Again, see, the knowledge of God is, in this case, a parallel to the idea of obedience in the account about King Saul, which we read in one of the books of Samuel, right? It was in one of the books of Samuel. But that occurred, well, it was in 1 Samuel, I think. Had to have been. What was 2 Samuel, the beginning of? Let's check. By the way, 1 Chronicles is the 13th book of the Bible, and Hosea is the 28th book of the Bible, in the Bible that we use, which is the same basic format as the Masoretic text. We're using the Masoretic text, but we're not really adhering to the Masoretic text, because we know the Septuagint is the version that Jesus and his apostles used. But 1 Samuel, the last chapter, this is where Saul died, you see. Yeah, so it's in the book of 1 Samuel that all these events with King Saul occurred. And we're in the 28th book of the Bible, Hosea, right now, chapter 6. And the fridge has started up again, so it's a bit noisy here now. But they themselves, like earthling man, have overstepped the covenant. Verse 7, there is where they have dealt treacherously with me. See, Jehovah chided the Israelites for failing to observe the covenant of Moses, the law of Moses, the covenant that they had with Jehovah, which had been introduced by Moses. There is where they have dealt treacherously with me. Gilead is a town of practicers of what is harmful. Now, Gilead's on the east of the Jordan. Reuben, the tribe of Reuben, is on the east of the Jordan. And their footprints, the footprints of the people of Gilead, their footprints are blood. That's bad. Blood meaning death, symbolizing death. And as in a laying or lying in wait for a man, the association of priests are marauding bands. By the wayside, they commit murder at Shechem. Shechem, I looked it up, it's the place where Abraham first came by the big trees of Mamre when he settled in the promised land for the first time. Or at least, perhaps, certainly, now whether that was the very first time or certainly at the time he was 75, we think he went there. At the time of his age 75 years, when he came for his final, you know, the final settling in the land of Canaan as he moved from Haran, he settled near Shechem, near the big trees of Mamre. And Hamor was the chieftain of the town of Shechem, from whom Abraham purchased a burial cave. So that's what we know about Shechem, because they have carried on nothing but loose conduct. So it's on the west side of the Jordan that the priests were, because the priests were, of course, in Jerusalem. In the house of Israel, I've seen a horrible thing. Verse 10. There is fornication on the part of Ephraim. Israel has defiled itself. Furthermore, O Judah, a harvest has been fixed for you when I gather back the captive ones of my people. That is the end of Hosea chapter 6. Excuse me. I nearly had a sneeze there. Furthermore, O Judah, a harvest has been fixed for you when I gather back the captive ones of my people. So, he doesn't like the things done by Ephraim because it is the spiritual fornication, but also the actual literal fornication. They made women harlots. The men made the women. They treated them like harlots. And that was a defilement. Verse 10, but also in verse 11, Judah was mentioned. And also Judah's mentioned here when it talks about the priests committing murder at Shechem. Those were the priests, evidently. Well, they had to be, yeah. The priests in the southern kingdom of Judah, the priests were, of course, associated with Jerusalem. Depends whether it's talking about the northern priests. Of course, they were much more evil. But if they're committing murder at Shechem, where is Shechem? It's in... I'm thinking it was in Judah, but let's see what I've got here. Let's look it up here. Shechem. Oh, it seems to have been within Manasseh's territory. In the mountainous region of Ephraim. Okay, Ephraim. So that's from the Insight book I'm reading there. Well, let's see, but it doesn't really show. When I click here, it doesn't give me a reference that I can look up where it is. There it is, in the house of Israel, I've seen a horrible thing. Right, okay. Fornication, every kind of unlawful sexual intercourse. That's what fornication is. That's from the reference Bible. Oh, it's from an appendix of some kind, I think. 5A. Yeah. This is the reference Bible that we're using today, actually. We use it every day, the reference Bible. From 1984, the New World Translation. Furthermore, O Judah, a harvest has been fixed for you. Notice there's no reference there. When I gather back the captive ones. In Judah, in verse 4, it says, the loving kindness of you people is like the morning clouds and like the dew that early goes away. So the love of Judah, the love of the men of Judah wasn't a durable or lasting love. It wasn't it wasn't a good, strong principle of love that endured. Their love was more of a temporary kind. And so, in verse 11, Yahweh intended, that's the true God, whose name is Yahweh, intended that the captive ones of Judah would be gathered back, which is interesting because at this time of Hosea, of course, Judah had not been taken captive. So it's prophetic. Well, thankfully, we're essentially finished our study when my nose starts to have a little bit of a run. But it's been a good study, has it not? And I mean, I was just about falling asleep before I started the study, but I think I'm going to be able to go to bed any time once we conclude here in a few minutes, 2 minutes or so remaining in our study for today. That was Hosea, wasn't it? So, what have we got that we can look at in 2 minutes? We looked at another proverb today, did we? Or was it Ecclesiastes? Yeah, Ecclesiastes we looked at today. 3 and 5, wasn't it? So, I don't think I did that chapter. I didn't do that chapter in terms of, in the Ward Green version, translating Ecclesiastes. But I did translate chapter 2 of Ecclesiastes, where it says in verse 1 of my own particular version, which is rhyming verse, Ecclesiastes 2 and 1, so I said to myself in my heart, come, enjoy, see good, but these vanity came to destroy. I took as insanity laughter's estate, and as for rejoicing, what does it create? I searched in my heart how to bring cheer with wine, while steering my heart into wisdom divine. To lay hold on folly, I took men to mind their future days best under heaven to find. Great works did I do, building houses aspree, also vineyards and gardens and parks with fruit tree. I made pools of water to irrigate well the forest, wherein many trees came to dwell. That's all we have time for, but we note from the book of Hosea itself, wine destroys good motive. Interestingly, because that's not a common teaching among anyone, really. Even Christians or other religions as well. But okay, we're just at the end of our video. It's February 27th, 2024 of the Common Era, and the time is 19:34 hours Eastern Time. March 10th is going to be, I believe, the switchover, if I'm recalling correctly. It's the second Sunday in March. We're going to be going back to Daylight Savings Time, but I'm Ward Green. I love you very much. On my behalf, this is Liv Dusty, and this is Cassie saying bye for now.